Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and I'm here to say to you, welcome to the party. All right. So before we dive right in, I wanted to pause for a minute and say thank you guys so much for your continued support and for all of your patience waiting for season two. We know it's been a long time coming. If you listened to our last episode, you will have heard it's been sort of a chaotic year for a number of us, but we are back on track and we are so excited for what is coming. We got a ton of episodes in the pipeline and we're stoked to share them with you guys, including this next one. So in this episode, Sean and I, we actually take a minute to sit down and discuss what it was like for us growing up as pastor's kids. We talk about a Barna article. We even try and get to the bottom of what is it that causes some pastor's kids to actually try and distance themselves as far as they can away from religion. And what is it that causes some of us to stay? We hope you'll enjoy this conversation, and thank you so much for listening once again. Well, all right, Sean, here we are again. Looks like it's just the two of us this time.
Just the two of us. Why is that? Where is Jesse and Eric?
Just the way I like it. So Jesse's gone. He's on a trip right now, so he wasn't able to record with us. And I don't know where Eric is. He's probably eating chicken somewhere in a closet.
I'm pretty sure his family's in town. I think that's all it is.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And I thought we were family, but I guess that's over now. We're just never going to see him again.
Exactly.
So that's no big deal. We don't really need him. It's not like he does anything around here.
He's the least important person.
Yeah, least team. Important by far.
Exactly.
So, Eric, if you're listening to this, do your job.
Perfecto. But yeah, it's the two of us this time. And
we're both actually on Thanksgiving break because I'm a teacher and Anthony, you are a student right now. So we both get some time off right now.
We are ruled by the academic calendar.
It's both a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, it's a good thing because there's set breaks, mm-hmm. and it's a bad thing because there's set breaks, which mean there are no flexible dates to go and do something. So if there's something exciting in September, forget about it.
Exactly.
Nothing to do. It has to be summer.
Unless you just want to bail.
Yeah.
You could always just not show up for class.
Well, I mean, you can. I can't do that.
That's true. You'd be fired.
Yeah.
Where's Mr. Lenoff today?
Are you sick? Are you injured? I just didn't want to come in.
I was at a Weird Al Yankovic concert today.
Did a collab with Kenny G. Anthony. I literally just listened to, before we got on, you sent me Kanye West's new album.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like a whole, I feel like our group could have a conversation just on that.
That could be an episode.
That needs to go with the music conversation. That's for a later time. But you sent me the one where he has literally, he collaborates with Kenny G.
Right. Yeah.
Kanye West and Kenny G. And I just listened to that. And I was like, this is weird. But then he comes in, I'm like, this is actually somehow good. How does this work together? I never imagined it would sound okay. And I'm still digesting that. But I listened to that right before because that was something you sent me, and I was just kind of amazed by that.
It somehow just works. And as soon as I heard that song, I was like, I have to send this to Sean. He doesn't listen to Kanye, but he listens to Kenny. So the other popular K. And for those who are listening, Sean actually is a pretty great saxophone player himself. So I always send him anything sax related. That's probably 40% of our friendship is just saxophones.
Sax related content.
Exactly.
Yep. So, I'm trying to pull up my, I'm being like a grandpa right now. I'm trying to pull up my web browser, but it's not popping up properly. Like,
wait, so do I open my email to get to Google?
Yeah, this is great. Okay. You ready? I'm going to give you a list of people. This is trivia time, Anthony.
I'm ready.
And, this list of people, you need to tell me what's, the common theme with all of these people. Okay. What's in common between all these people. Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Denzel Washington. Alice Cooper.
Ooh, that's hard. Yikes.
Katy Perry. Daniel Tosh from Tosh.0.
Wow.
Martin Luther King Jr. Jessica Simpson.
Oh, my word.
Malcolm X. And Vincent Van Gogh. What do those people have in common?
That's the weirdest group of people.
Yep. There's not a lot in common between those people, but there is one thing. Okay, do you have any guess?
Denzel Washington and Jessica Simpson. You could say money, like riches, like all of them.
Wait, Denzel Washington and Jessica Simpson threw you off, but Vincent Van Gogh didn't?
That's true. Vincent Van Gogh has less to do with Jessica Simpson than anyone ever.
I mean, him and Katy Perry are kind of, you know, it makes sense.
Right, but Jessica Simpson, that's a stretch.
Yeah, it's just too much. Anthony, they're all pastor's kids.
Dang, wow.
Yeah.
That's wild,
actually. And I just thought, you know, as weird as that list is, it's kind of interesting. So, but I wanted to bring up, since it's just me and you today, and Jesse and Eric aren't here. Now, if you don't know and you're listening to this, Anthony and I are pastor's kids.
Right. I think we said that on here, maybe.
We might have. And I don't know if we've ever discussed it.
Right.
If we did, it was very brief. But I just thought it'd be interesting. This is not going to be a full episode, just really fast. Just like a conversation about, you know, we both grew up in the Adventist church and the Adventist school system. And, but for both of us, we have a lot of memories growing up and just being at our father's churches and hearing them speak and going to potluck and being the pastor's kid. And, I just thought it'd be kind of an interesting topic. Like, what was your experience, Anthony, growing up as a pastor's kid? Would you look back and say it was overall positive or a negative experience? Like, would you change that about yourself? Do you think you'd be better off if you weren't a pastor's kid?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good question. I think I look back and, oh man, I think it was definitely overall positive. I feel like I was sort of privileged with great parents. And so because of that, they just did a really good job of not making it a thing, you know, like, because I meet a lot of other pastors' kids, and they felt a lot of expectation. They felt like they had to be perfect. They felt like a lot of eyes on them, and I never had that feeling. Like my dad was always really, really. I don't ever remember feeling that pressure, especially from him. Maybe from some older members of the church at times. Like I remember one time I was whistling in the basement of our church one time. And one of the elders,
as all pastor's kids do,
exactly as we all do. Thing. And one of the elders said he walks up to me and he just like, you know, leans down in my face with the, you know, the stereotypical crooked finger. And he's just like, no whistle in church. And I was just like, oh, OK, I guess we don't whistle here. So I definitely got like messages and, you know, stuff like that from members of the church, but never from my own parents. So for me, it was overall a positive experience. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I can mirror that sentiment. I think, you know, I never got any pressure from my parents. In fact, the opposite, you know, my dad would tell me, you don't have to become a pastor. In fact, it was interesting. It's always the old church members, right? Nothing against old church members. They always mean well, right? But I did have a few growing up that were looking forward to when I would become a pastor.
Yes.
Like, oh, are you going to take over your dad's church? Or like, oh, when are you going to, you're excited to become a pastor? It was like the assumption, almost like the assumption. And I don't remember word for word what it was, but that's in my memory banks. Like that's very clear in my mind. Like I remember those moments of like, you know, you're going to be a pastor or something like that.
There definitely
sounds
is kind of
crazy, but did you ever get any comments like that or that kind of were similar to that?
Yeah, definitely. You like, there's definitely this sort of monarchy sort of, I don't know if people just assume. I mean, I chalk it up to like maybe like 50% of it is like, you kind of do that with anyone in a career who has a son or a daughter in that, you know, who has kids and you're like, oh, are you going to follow in your parents' footsteps? So I get that, you know, but it definitely feels like a lot when your parent is a pastor for sure. Like, there is sort of that interesting assumption. Even if it's just, everyone's just assuming, cause they're just trying to make conversation or whatever. It definitely does kind of get in you like, man, people, it's sort of a thing. Like people kind of are expecting that for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just interesting for me, like, it's just kind of interesting that, I don't know. Okay, so I grew up with a grandfather being a pastor and my father being a pastor. So so it's like second generation. What would you call that? Second generation
pastoral. You would have been the third. So yeah.
So, but anyways, like there was almost like that kind of mindset too. Like, oh, it's been, you know, two generations of pastors and like my grandpa did, you know, different work, travel all around the country. And my dad did evangelism, worked on It Is Written with George Vandeman.
What a legend.
You know, like just all these things, you know.
And, George Vandeman, that's a deep cut.
No, but I mean, like everywhere I've gone, someone's known someone from my family that was a pastor. Mm. You know, like my dad's cousin's a pastor. And just other people in our family are pastors or evangelists or do things like that. So there's a lot of Lenhoffs out there. Like, oh, I know a Lenhoff, or I know your grandpa or knew your dad when he did this. And it was, I see that everywhere. Right. And, so there was kind of that mindset. And I remember growing up, I don't think it ever negatively impacted me that, you know, I grew up a pastor's kid, but as I say that, I actually remember. So there was one time, I'm not going to call anyone out here, but when I was in elementary school, there were three of us pastor's kids, actually four of us, but the three boy pastor's kids, we were goofing off in the back during whatever, math class, social studies, I don't know what it was.
Sean, was this you and me?
No, no, no. This was in elementary because we didn't meet until
high
freshman
school.
Year of high school.
Right, okay, okay.
And in elementary, this was later elementary.
Okay, got it.
And we were goofing off, and the teacher stopped class, looked at us three.
Yikes.
And said, now, I know you three pastor's kids do not have straight A's right now, and that's a problem. Ooh. What are you doing right now?
Publicly, in front of the class, she said.
Yeah,
that.
In front of the whole class, which, by the way, as a teacher, like, that's a no-no. Like, you don't...
That's really inappropriate.
Like, you don't... You totally don't do that. Super inappropriate, but I remember that... That moment really well, like it just it's burned into my memory.
It's seared,
like the other moments. But even like the, I don't remember being negatively impacted by the church members saying, "Oh, like you're going to be a pastor," and like whatever. Like you know, my parents always said no big deal. And it's interesting. Another teacher I had, his name is Harold Richards. He's still a teacher in Washington State. He's obviously well known for his father and grandfather being HMS Richards and HMS Richards Jr. They're obviously really well known for the voice of prophecy. And so they're known worldwide. And he remembers growing up, and he would talk about in class, like he felt the pressure of, you know, being an HMS, right? Like, oh, he's got to take up the mantle. Like he's got an Avenus family name.
Right.
And he actually named his son Jonathan because he didn't want to put that pressure on his son. So like it's even though we kind of joke about the whole pastor's kid thing, like it's obvious that there's some pressure with it.
Yeah.
Like it went to the point where he didn't even name his son, you know, continue that line because, you know, he didn't want that pressure on him. So anyways, I thought it would be just something interesting to reflect on.
Yeah.
I would say except for that moment in school and maybe a couple times at church where I felt maybe a bit more pressure for who I was. And I definitely was not the well-behaved PK. Like, I got thrown out of Sabbath school. Like, I had a Sabbath school teacher that said, you know, you don't have to come back.
Dang.
Like, that's pretty, you know, like, I was pretty annoying. And I'm doing penance for it now because I teach junior high. So I get these kids all the time.
You get the most annoying kids in your class.
And I know those most annoying kids will be the pastors someday.
Right. It's all full circle.
The church leaders, yeah.
Exactly. No, I really relate with that because I think it wasn't till later in life that I actually felt that pressure. Like when I went to college and started undergrad at Walla Walla University, there were professors there who had my dad in class in undergrad.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did definitely feel like this comparison to him. Like they vividly remembered him, and they would bring it up like in conversation. And you know, I remember my dad had done poorly in this one class. And so a professor literally said to me, I think you know about this, Sean. He literally said to me like, oh, are you going to fail this class like your dad?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's kind of inappropriate. So I definitely didn't feel it until later on in life when there started to be a little bit more expectation in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I completely get that. That's wild. I mean, just to feel that like comparison, you know, like that's a lot to like, again, that's like a big teacher. No, no. That's just crazy. But anyways, I sent you an article. We were kind of looking over this before we started recording.
Yes.
And it's from the Barna Research Group. And they actually did a whole article titled The Prodigal Pastor's Kids, Fact or Fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's basically just looking at like pastors. They interviewed a ton of pastors, I'm assuming around the country, mm-hmm. and just kind of reflecting on if their children strayed from the church, if they left, if they felt too much pressure. Mm-hmm. It seems like in general, like that tends to be the case. As I kind of read through it, it looks like about half or so, it says 40%, mm-hmm. Started doubting their faith. A third are no longer actively involved in church. Would you say that's your experience, Anthony? Like, it almost kind of was like you knew who the other pastor's kids were.
Like, yeah.
I definitely know some that just straight up left.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely. That sounds pretty accurate, I feel like.
But, I mean, according to the article, it's not like it's... I mean, when they compare it to other numbers, it's not like it's a lot higher mm-hmm. for those that leave Christian faith or leave the church.
Right, as opposed to if you didn't grow up as a pastor's kid, right?
Right, right. But they did go through, like, what are the main reasons why pastors think mm-hmm. that... that their children struggle with the development of their own faith. Mm. And kind of the list that goes through that is number one is unrealistic expectations others place on them.
Yep.
And notice there, it's not about the pastor placing those expectations. And we've kind of related to that as well. It's maybe others. Mm-hmm. You had your college professor. I had, we both had church members, but also I had that teacher, mm-hmm. Just the statements they made. So that was the number one by far. Mm-hmm. And then after that, exposure to the negative aspects of the church. Anthony, would you say that there were, like, just being so close to church and mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever went through the whole church politics thing, like if there was ever a split or a group of people left the church or there was just like a negativity where, you know, it just was gross, right? You see like the underbelly of the church because that's what your dad's involved in, you know?
Oh, man, yeah, that's interesting. I feel like it maybe wasn't until later on in life when I started to see that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And by that time, I think I had sort of developed my own faith. Uh-huh. So I was able to be a little more resilient to it. But I think early on, like my dad did a good job of shielding me from that. Although, he was one to, to talk about church politics at home around the dinner table at times. So there were things that I was aware of, that was going on at church, but I felt like by the time I started to sort of see, maybe some of the more, unsavory, you know, things that sometimes uh-huh. happen in church life. I was old enough to say, that's unhealthy, you know, but that's not a true representation of what actual Jesus community should be.
Yeah.
So I definitely saw it, but I think by the time I really started to see it a lot, I was able to differentiate in that way.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, by the time, like I said, by the time we were in college, I don't know. I mean, I definitely struggled or doubted with my faith. I mean, I think it went through like mm-hmm. Those who seriously doubted their faith. I mean, who didn't? I don't know. Maybe not doubt, challenge would be a word, but I definitely went through, especially in high school, mm-hmm. Just a period of really doubting my faith, just kind of in that super spiritual apathetic or just in life in general, like the grind of high school early on, like freshman, sophomore year. Like I just remember, that being in general, a rough time of life mm-hmm. for me. And so I definitely think that some of these numbers here, like it definitely resonates with me in a certain way. At the very beginning, I wouldn't say that being mm-hmm. a pastor's kid negatively influenced me. I would say there were stretches, like I just didn't want to be at church, but obviously you have to go. Or I don't know, maybe there were certain times that there was a certain image that had to be portrayed, mm-hmm. I guess, I felt like a pressure to act or say certain things look a certain way at church.
I was just recalling as you were talking, there was one area that I definitely did feel pressure in growing up, and that was from my parents, which was sort of like presentation as a pastor's kid. Like I remember my dad and I fought a long time about like dress and clothing and stuff. I was definitely a rebel in that way. Like I definitely, like I would intentionally not dress nice to church, and I would wear jeans when he wanted me to wear a suit. And I remember intentionally kind of going against, yeah. I think, how he... Because I think maybe there was... As much as you try and not... And I'm, you know, I'm not a parent, but I imagine yeah. as a parent, like, as much as you try and not let your kids affect you, yeah. like they just do because they're part of you. So I can imagine, like, if you have a, if you're the pastor and you have a kid who's, like, insane or, like, you know, yeah. wearing rags to church, people are gonna be like, yo,
what's going on?
What's happening at home? Yeah. Like, what's the problem? So I get it now looking back as an adult, but yeah. I remember as a teenager, like Sean knows this, and some friends who you guys are listening, you know that I went through, like, a real, like, emo kind of gothic kind of phase in my life. So I was wearing, like, you know, really tight pants before it was cool for guys to wear tight pants, and you know, like, just, like, studded bracelets and all black, and, like, so I'd show up to church like that, and
yeah,
my dad would just look at me and sigh, and, like, he was never, like, angry or, like, yelled at me or you know, pressure or whatever, because we've always had a good relationship, but
he felt uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, like, I definitely knew that he had an expectation, and or he wanted me to present in a certain way, and I was going against that, you know.
Yeah. So if you hear noises, speaking of sons, yeah. I am holding my son right now.
What a parent.
Because he woke up early from his nap, and now he's grabbing the audio cords. So if you hear things, Eric will try to work magic to get rid of all extra noise, but you'll probably hear a couple
moments of coos, Owen. Coos and caws. Yep.
And he's a teacher's kid. I need to talk with, because that's a whole other thing.
That's interesting.
Like, I imagine, like, having him in my class. Mm-hmm. It'll kind of be similar, I think. I mean, there's a certain expectation. Like, I have in my class some teacher's kids. Hmm. And there definitely is certain expectations put on them. You mm-hmm. know, obviously, like, oh, you got to be the example.
Right.
Like, you're at the school where, like, your parent works.
Right.
And he literally just ripped out my my headphones.
Nice.
Anyways, I thought I would just mention that because I think that's definitely a factor.
I see him.
He's so restless.
He is.
Olin wants us to end.
Yeah.
He wants us to be done.
He's got his own agenda.
But
the one statistic that I'm interested in, that I'm looking at,
yeah.
is what pastors wish they'd done differently in raising their kids.
Yeah.
And it says 42% of them wish they had spent more time with their children. And
I did see that one.
I wondered if you felt that growing up, Sean. Like, did you feel like you wish your dad had spent more time with you? Like, stuff like that?
Honestly, for me, no. Like, obviously, I don't know if that's certain denominations or certain workload. I mean... I never felt that way. I mean, especially since my dad mainly worked on Sabbath, and so, like,
no,
he'd have
days.
Church. He'd have, no, I mean, but, you know, like, as a pastor, yeah. like, there's church board meetings, there's other meetings and visitations mm-hmm. and other things like that, hospital visits and other things too. But, mm-hmm. I mean, in general, yeah, I got to spend time with him. I never felt like, oh, I didn't get to spend enough time with my parents. Mm-hmm. That was never generally an issue. But what about you? Like, do you feel like there was ever a season of your dad's life, like with his ministry, that he was just not around enough?
Yeah, I felt the same way as you. I feel like my dad somehow did a really good job of, like, family was always so important to him, you know, when we were growing up,
yeah.
that he always did such a good job. And I often describe my dad growing up as, like, the best dad anyone could ask for, because he was, he's awesome. And you know my dad, and he's just great. And I remember he would find, like, weird little creative ways to spend time with us. Like, I remember he'd come into my room at, like, 12 midnight after my mom was asleep and be like, son, I just made an apple pie and we're going to watch Mission Impossible. And I'm like, oh, I was like, you know, 13. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. So, that was, you know, the age, where you still think your parents are cool. So I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
So my dad would always do stuff like that. Like, he'd take us to movies at night and, he'd take us out and just hang out and talk, and he did a good job. So it's interesting to me. I feel like the things that we're saying, as I interrupt my own thought process, but I feel like we're sort of the exception, it seems like, Sean, to a lot of these statistics. And because I feel like a lot of these we've listened and we're like, well, we didn't really relate to that. We didn't really. Why do you think that is? Do you think we just had fantastic parents somehow? We were just the unicorns of the pastor's kid universe, or what do you chalk that up to?
Well, I mean, do you mean, like, staying involved in church, or, like, being Christian, or what part? Like, just the negative, having negative experiences, like, not having
Yeah, like, you know, because, you know, that's kind of what this article is discussing, right? The the stereotype is for a lot of pastors' kids, they did feel like there was so many, you know, expectations on them. They did feel like they saw the, you know, the evil underbelly. You know, I have a you know, a person that I work with right now who one of her parents was a teacher in the seminary at Andrews.
Uh-huh.
And she felt a lot of these ways from having conversations with her. She sort of expressed to me that, you know, she felt a lot of these things. And as a result, she, you know, and it's more, you know, it's more complicated than that. There's layers to it. But as a result, she no longer identifies as an Adventist or even a Christian at all. So
I think you mentioned too, like, and that's like you said, a teacher at seminary. And I think even like in that case too, like from my recollection, like, I think we've had a conversation about this, like, that individual's dad, like, it was actually pretty well known, actually pretty prominent in the Adventist church.
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of think of like that pressure, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you grew up with. And your dad was the one that was the face of what, many articles or many sermons, mm-hmm. or speaking engagements. And that's just kind of interesting that that's kind of the route it went down.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm intrigued by, you know, what is it? And I don't know if this article actually, I haven't read all the way through it. I don't know if it actually gets to the core root, but I wonder what is the differentiating factor, you know, between pastors' kids who reject it all, you know, or the ones who decide to stay. And I mean, like us, who we've made religion and church literally our career and livelihood.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're the minority of the minority, not only those who stayed within religion, but also those, like, we've took on the mantle as well, you know, and not without our, like we mentioned before, without our moments of doubt and questioning, like literally deep questioning, deep doubting. And at least I know for me and for you too, like, questions and just trying to wrestle with faith. It hasn't been easy, but I wonder what is the differentiating thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, I would think it's a lot of it is transparency. Like you said, we both grew up with, like, you need to have a certain image in church.
Mm-hmm.
And we've both come to terms with it. We've made peace with that because we understand, like, how many moving pieces there are, and, like, mm-hmm. it's complicated, right? Like, you don't want to be fake, but you also know that things can become stumbling blocks when you're trying to put a certain image forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you do try to live the ideal, right? You're not the ideal. If everyone knew, like, if you went up to your pulpit and shared all your deepest, darkest sins, like, is that really going to be the most loving or wholesome or least stumbling block like thing to do?
Is it even
for
helpful?
The people that, is it even helpful? Is it something that will lead others to Christ or help grow your church or keep the peace in your current congregation? So, like, mm-hmm. I get that, right? You don't just leave it out there, you know, just in the open. So there's certain things that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you may be struggling with, but it's like, hey, this isn't the right time to do that or say that. Or if you wear that certain thing, like, that could be taken a wrong way.
Right.
And it's just trying to consider that and thinking, you know, what should be done, what shouldn't be done.
I
think it's a balance though.
Yeah. I feel like I'm, maybe as we start to wrap up, I feel like to drill down a bit, if you could personally in your life, I'm asking you because I haven't thought of my own. If you could personally in your life sort of point to something that kept you in, you know, whether it was great parenting or like your dad was really intentional or like struggle with your own faith, or like if there was one thing or two things, or, you know, what do you think those things would be that kept you from walking away from everything despite, you know, because we've mentioned you did feel the pressure, right? From like teachers and people. And I think we both did in different ways. So what could you point to, any one, two, you know, a couple things that kept you in?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely, not to criticize my church too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that most of my spirituality, my growth, or my journey back to my own faith and making it personal,
mm-hmm.
and making it my own thing instead of just my dad's faith and just an image you show at church.
Right.
Being at a Christian school where there were specific friends that I got to know, including you,
mm-hmm.
Jesse, Eric, those guys, that lasted throughout college, that, where we started doing things with our faith, where we started having those conversations. We started a Bible study in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We went on mission trips together. We had dorm room conversations. We had worships together.
Good times.
There were youth rallies and retreats and all those different things that we have memories together doing. And I would say that those experiences deepened my faith. It surrounded me with a good friend group that was rooted in those things, that shared ideas or struggles that we all had. And we were like, wait, you did this too? Or like, you had this problem too? And like, oh,
yeah,
I wasn't the only one.
Right.
And I'm not the only one that was doubting my faith or that one question I don't want to ask my dad because I'm too scared and don't want to sound like an atheist.
You remember that there was that one summer where we both came back and I was like, I think I'm an atheist. And you're like, yeah. I think I am too.
Yeah. And we're it was a dark moment. It was
hopeful because we realized we're both, you know, going through the same.
We were wrestling with it. And then we spent time fasting. Like we would go up into the mountains and hike and just fast and pray and worship. And those were good moments. And so moments like that were really testing our faith, really trying to experience our relationship with God through Bible study, prayer, fasting, just conversations. And those things really kept me, I think, in the church.
Mm. Wow.
And I think, I definitely, there was a time where the last place I wanted to be was at the church.
Same.
For a service. Like yeah. It just felt gross. Like I didn't look forward to Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an unhealthy relationship with Sabbath and church for me. And again, it wasn't one person. I think it was part of my own spiritual journey. So not just pinning it on one person or my family or anyone like that. I think it was just part of what I needed to go through, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful I don't have that image anymore. That's that I've been able to grow where I love church. I actually enjoy doing leadership positions in church, which I do. And I joke around like I didn't become a pastor, but I'm a Bible teacher. So I fell far from the tree. And so
nice.
But yeah, I've come to appreciate where I came from, my background, and everything. So, and I know it's kind of similar for you as well.
Yeah, it would be maybe similar to what you said. Like somewhere along the way, I was privileged or blessed, or maybe you could call it providential, or you know, just to meet you guys and you know, like to have a solid group of friends that I could journey with together where we could, it wasn't like we were isolated in our questions and stuff like that. And the fact that we could relate on so many levels, you know, you and me being pastor's kids and kind of having really similar experiences growing up in pretty, conservative, you know, traditional backgrounds, you know, like, and not to, you know, just blame our parents, you know, cause they're still trying to, they were working out. How do we do Sabbath together as a family? How do you know?
Yeah.
So as a result of that, we experienced a lot of like, and I know I did a lot of like, my parents were trying to figure out like what is okay to do on Sabbath. And I remember having a huge distaste for Sabbath. And it was just the thing I dreaded the most growing up.
And no video games.
Exactly.
No movies.
Right. Exactly. So, but yeah, I think at a certain point when my faith became my own, which was not through my parents and was not through my dad, which when I talk to him now about it, it's really interesting because, it was actually through our high school dean at Auburn Academy who like he sat me down and he would do Bible studies with me and he talked about the gospel and I was like, wow, I've never heard this in my whole life. And when I told my dad, he was just like, son, I've been preaching about this for like, you know, your whole life. And I'm like, wow. Like, so I,
sometimes you just need that person, right? That says it a certain way where it's like, oh, he has been saying it, but I just wasn't listening. I didn't have ears to listen.
Somehow you just couldn't hear it. And now having been a youth pastor for kids, now I experienced the opposite where like, you know, I'll be with the parents and the kids will be wanting to get baptized and they'll be like, you know, mom, like we've been learning about this in Bible study. And, you know, they'll be like, we've been saying that at home this whole time.
Yeah.
Or they'll come to me and they'll be like, Pastor Anthony, we don't know what you said, but we've been saying the same things. And I'm like, I can't even take credit. Like sometimes you just need a different voice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think when your faith becomes your own, for me at least, as soon as that happened, I was like, I'm in. Like,
yeah.
So
yeah, that's good. Well, as we as we close up, Anthony, thank you for having this conversation with me.
I see your son peeking out.
I know he's wanting me to be done.
That's important.
But I wanted to close with a question just kind of to anyone listening.
Yeah.
If you are a pastor's kid,
yeah,
or if you grew up around them, surrounded by them, like what is your experience with that? Was it positive or negative? Would you say that this whole thing about there being a reputation of pastor's kids being rebellious or falling away from church, like, is that a valid stereotype? Is that your experience? Is it the opposite?
Mm-hmm.
What, and if you're a pastor's kid, like what experiences can you share with us? Just, just share those in the comments, either on Instagram, Facebook.
I'd be really interested.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, we can throw a thing up on Instagram too. Like, yeah. I'd be interested for other pastors' kids. Yeah. Let us know what you think. All right, everyone. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought. We appreciate it, as usual. And we are so excited for what is to come for the rest of the season. We got so much on deck, and we're super stoked to share it with you guys. Before we wrap up here, I want to also thank our producer, Eric Edstrom, for all the work that he's done. And if you didn't know, Eric is also the winner of the I Chugged 50 Gallons of Lemonade Award, which is an award given in the middle of Wisconsin once every 100 years. So he is the recipient of that. If you want to know more, you can ask him about it. And as usual, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.